Good day. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail with Mark Amaru Pinkham. This program will explore the secrets behind the Knights Templar and other secret mysteries of the world today. Now, here's your host, Mark Amaru Pinkham.
Greetings, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Guardians of the Holy Grail, the program dedicated to diving deep to uncover and expose the truth behind the Knights Templar, the secret societies, and the ancient Holy Grail mysteries. The Guardians of the Holy Grail was created by me to clear up many of the popular misconceptions that have been perpetrated in the mainstream media for quite a while regarding the secret societies, Holy Grail mysteries, the bloodline from Jesus and Mary Magdalene, and the secret government. Through the show, I hope to set the record straight with hard facts from authors and researchers, as well as with testimonials from current and past members of the Initiatic Societies. I myself am a Knight Templar of the International Order of Gnostic Templars, which was founded to revive the mystical rites and wisdom of the original Knights Templar, which over the centuries has been either lost or ignored. You can learn all about our Gnostic Temple organization, and you can sign our mailing list by visiting our website, which is www.gnostictemplars.org. You can also sign up for our 18-lesson Gnostic Templar e-course and become an associate member, and you can become an initiated member if you feel guided to do so. Besides reviving the lost Templar wisdom, the long-term goal of our organization is to educate the world about the primal Gnostic alchemical path, which is the essence of all religions and unites them as one. It is this path that the secret societies have sought to replace religious dogma with for virtually hundreds of years, and to eventually create a one-world spirituality. Now, during today's show, if you have any questions for our guest, feel free to call our toll-free line at 866-472-5795. Now, before we get into the program, I'd like to again mention the tour I will be leading in September 20th to the 30th, in southern France and northern Spain. We're going to all those places associated with the Holy Grail mysteries, the bloodline mysteries, the Templars. We're going to Rennes Le Chateau. As many of you know, this is where some documentation about the Holy Bloodline was discovered about 100 years ago. We're going to Montserrat in Spain, which has a lot of Holy Grail mysteries and Templar mysteries associated with that, and also has an incredible Black Madonna there. St. Marie de la Mer is where Mary Magdalene and some of the disciples of Jesus landed after leaving the Holy Land. We're going there. And we're going also to Montsegur, which was the temple fort of the Cathars. And it was kind of the scene of their last stand, so to speak, when they eventually were forced to climb down off their mountain and succumb to the flames of the Inquisition. During our tour, there's going to be a lot of meditations and rituals and a lot of talking about the mysteries, and I'll be specifically talking about information in my new book called World Gnosis, The Coming Gnostic Civilization. And there'll even be a chance to become initiated into the path of the Gnostic Knight. And we corresponded this tour to happen along with the equinox and the full moon. So it's going to be a very, very powerful time for everybody. And if you are interested, please go to this website, www.sacredsitesjourneys.com, and you can get a lot more information about the tour, and you can register for it if you'd like. And I think it's going to be a popular tour, so you might not want to wait too long in order to register for it. Okay, today we're going to be discussing the, I guess you'd call it the infamous Montauk experiment, where the government is said to have set up a secret laboratory for teleportation and time travel and in an abandoned military base in Montauk, New York. We're going to be speaking with one of the subjects of that experiment and also finding out from him a method for awakening the other 90% of our brain capacity that we're not normally using. Our guest today is Stuart Swerdlow, who's a natural clairvoyant who has the ability to see auric fields and personal archetypes, as well as read DNA sequences and mind patterns. Stuart's great uncle was Yakov Swerdlow, the first president of the Soviet Union, and his grandfather helped form the Communist Party in the United States in the 1930s. To ensure that his royal loyalties stayed with the U.S. government, Stuart was recruited for specific government mind control experiments which enhanced his natural abilities. Stuart spent many years in service to various U.S. and foreign government agencies and special interest groups. His mind and body were used for genetic and mind control experiments, which ultimately led to severe illness, broken relationships, and even kundalini activation. After several years of deep self-analysis, Stuart merged with higher levels of his multidimensional self, which ended up saving his life. His mission now is to help others heal themselves in a positive way, thus avoiding the negativity that he himself experienced. Stuart is a linguist who speaks 10 languages. He says that the often considered unused 90% portion of the brain is actually in constant communication with the mind of God, receiving information in the language of hyperspace, an interuniversal and interspecies language which consists of color, tone, and archetype. Because people are not usually trained to understand this language, only a small amount of this information is able to filter through to the conscious mind, mostly in the dream state. By learning his Swerdlow hyperspace techniques, you can consciously learn this language, as well as unlock DNA sequences pre-programmed within you since the beginning of your existence. This new information will help you learn who and what you are, as well help you to understand your reason for being. To learn more about Stuart and the Swerdlow hyperspace techniques, visit this website, which is www.expansions.com. So welcome, Stuart. Greetings. Welcome to the Guardians of the Holy Grail.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
And well,
I've been on that tour. In fact, I did a documentary a couple of years ago in the south of France and northern Spain and all those locations you've mentioned.
Oh, no kidding. Well, if you feel like putting in a plug, feel free.
It's quite a tour. It's an amazing experience.
Okay. Good enough. Well, I don't know if you remember me, but we actually spoke together at the same conference in Zurich, Switzerland, about 10 years ago.
I do remember.
Oh, you do? Okay. It was a UFO Congress. I think that's what the name of it was.
And, yes, Zachariah Sitchin was there.
That's right. Yeah. And I talked about my usual crazy, weird things like serpents. And I think I was talking about Lucifer at the time because my book, The Conversations of the God, had just come out. So I'm sure I had an impact on a few people. So
okay.
I usually do. Yeah. Well, anyway, I remember you and I had a talk, and it had kind of stuck in my mind ever since we talked about the Montauk experiment a little bit and some of your experiences through it. So this is one reason I was anxious to have you on the show today. So let's talk about it. Let's talk about the Montauk experiment. So you say that your parents volunteered you for the Montauk experiment. How old were you at the time?
Well, that part isn't correct. They did not volunteer me. it was automatically assumed I would be going there because of my family background. And because of my family's history with the Soviet Union, the United States government was very concerned about loyalties. And basically, you went there or you were went someplace else that wasn't so nice even as that. So that wasn't much of a choice. But the Montauk Project was really an outgrowth, ultimately, of going back in history to the Roswell experience or incident, because the government was concerned, and when I say the government, I don't mean the political public government at the time. There was and is, as people know, a secret government behind the scenes. We already have a New World Order. It just isn't publicly acknowledged yet. And they are a few in number in comparison to the billions on the Earth. And so when you are so few in number by comparison, armies and weapons are not enough to maintain control because you could easily be overwhelmed. And so the most brilliant thing they could do was to create mind control so that they could basically monitor and develop functions for all the billions of people on the Earth, and in that way maintain their superiority over all others. And
the primary purpose of this was mind control.
Mind control, genetic manipulation, esoteric technology, which much of it came from both alien technology as well as what had been discovered from Atlantean times. Actually, what people may not realize is the government was almost more interested in what the Atlanteans had than what the aliens had to offer, because the Atlantean technology was already here, just needed to be discovered and revitalized.
And tell me about this Atlantean technology. How did they know it was Atlantean technology?
Well, when they first started to dig into Montauk, Montauk Point on the very eastern end of Long Island is actually the top of an archipelago that extends down into the Caribbean. And it's the remnant of Atlantis. Most of it is underwater. But Montauk Point, Block Island, Plum Island, those little outcroppings are still what's left above the water in that section of the ocean. And over centuries and millennia, sandbars built up between Montauk and the rest of Long Island. And anyone who's ever driven east from Long Island towards Montauk Point realizes at some point you're driving on a strip of sand, and then all of a sudden the ground rises up like it was the peak of the top of a hill or mountain. And back in 1799, George Washington was the very first one who decided to build a lighthouse in the area to protect against British invasion, and he decided to build a little underground warehouse or store area for weapons and supplies, just in case the area was cut off by attack. Over the decades and centuries, that little underground area was expanded upon and built until one time in the early 1900s, they literally broke through into this huge cavernous area, which in which they found the top of a pyramid. And in there, they found a lot of technology, which they realized was from Atlantean time period. And in fact, there are photographs from the early 1900s of people on vacation on the beach at Montauk taking photographs next to the peaks of what looks like pyramids. And of course, in those days, they assumed that the ancient Indians built them. And over the years, hurricanes and storms literally buried the rest of it, so that today you cannot find any of it left. But I believe in some of the Montauk books there are photographs of the tops of those pyramids.
So they're still there. If you knew where to dig, basically you could dig down and find them again.
Absolutely you could. And so they expanded this underground area down to 9 levels of occupation, if you will, where they revamped this technology, and of course a lot of it they didn't know what it did. And in this location, they actually had a submarine pen where you could actually enter this underground location from a location out in the Atlantic Ocean. And in fact, during World War II, residents of Montauk would see German U-boats off the coast who would come closer and then submerge as if they were coming towards land, but they wouldn't see them rise up again. And then at times they would see them rising up in the ocean and leaving as if they had exited at some point. And at no time did the U.S. military ever stop them. So that says that on some levels, both the Germans and the Americans in World War II were literally working together on some project. And in fact, during World War II, Montauk area, or that eastern end of Long Island, was one of only two places where Germans actually entered the land, came on land from a submarine. They found a German U-boat rats and military equipment and uniforms hidden away on the beach, and apparently they had changed into American-style clothing and took a train into Manhattan for espionage. And ultimately, those people were caught and put in prison and were actually kept in prison until after the war was over, and then instead of being repatriated to Germany, they mysteriously died.
Well, there's been a number of books written about Montauk. It sounds like there needs to be another one written.
Well, I did write my own. Yeah, I did write my own memoirs of what I remember there. It was not a thing that is a pleasant memory, but yet it has impact on our lives today because the mind control and programming that were developed in Montauk in those days, by the way, with German scientists who were brought to this country in Project Paperclip after the war, those experiments, that mind control, is used today and broadcast via satellites and cell tower and microwave tower transmissions for the purpose of programming people in a specific area or in a vast area.
Well, go ahead and tell me everything that they were working on and what they developed at Montauk.
Well, that's you'd be here for hours, Dave.
Well, I've got nothing better to do.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that. Well, I'll tell you what. The main thing that they worked on was the mind control and programming. Now, they realized as an outgrowth of the Nazi experiments in the concentration camps, that when you traumatize a young child, especially prepubescent, it can fracture the mind pattern into many pieces. And in fact, they estimated created a schematic of it, which looked like a cube, which was 13 by 13 by 13. And if you do the math, that's 2,197 compartments or alters within a personality or a mind pattern that can be programmed into sub-personalities. So that's a lot of programming in there. Of course, not all of them are built into full personalities. Some are partial. Some have only one specific function. Some are guardian alters. It's very complicated, and I write about that in my book, 13 Cubed. So that was one of the main thrusts of what they did. They also performed sexual magic ritual at this location because it was surrounded by water on three sides. Seawater is an amplifier for electromagnetic and psychic energy, which is why we find in coastal areas more ghosts and UFOs and things like this. And so they would perform ritual to invoke astral entities, demonic entities, in order to fulfill whatever agenda they had at the moment.
Was that based on some of the Crowley experiments?
Yes, it was also based on reptilian religion, which is a whole other category. In my book Blue Blood, I talk about how the Earth was colonized first by reptilian beings from the Draco star system. These beings are still here, actually, and live under the Earth and around the Earth. And they have a religion that invokes astral entities. And what we would call satanic religion is really based on the reptilian religion where they perform these rituals. So that was another function that was performed at Montauk. They also did weaponry. They built a particle beam accelerator, which was powered by Brookhaven National Labs, which is more towards the center of Long Island, and they would have these huge tubes of electrical lines that would go out to the East End. And if you go to Montauk now, you will see these electrical lines suddenly jolt into the earth for no apparent reason. They look like they're not going anywhere. There's no building nearby, but they just go right into the earth underground. And that is part of what powered this particle beam accelerator. And that weapon is what actually brought down a TWA 800, the Egypt Air flight, and the Swiss Air flight. So very interesting information there as well. Oh, it also brought down JF Kennedy Jr.'s plane as well. There was a time when people were afraid to fly around Long Island because they knew what was going on down there. Another thing that they did was weather modification. If you look at the history of storms in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s, you will see large hurricanes form in the Atlantic and actually make a line right towards Montauk Point. Same thing with winter weather going right towards that area. Strange weather occurred in the point itself. There are stories how in the middle of the summer one year it snowed there. Just snow in a hot, sunny day, snow came down. That was part of the weather experimentation. And, of course, one of the big things that people talk about and you hear about it in Hollywood, etc., is the time travel and interdimensional aspects of what happened at Montauk Point. They used alien technology to create vortices and even wormholes so that they could travel from point A to point B instantaneously.
Well, the one thing I remember so distinctly in our conversation in Switzerland, Stuart, is you telling me about being transported up to Mars. And
yes.
Do you feel comfortable talking about that experience now?
I wrote about it in my book, so I might as well.
Okay.
You know? Yes. What people first need to understand is that everything you've heard about history, everything you've heard about science and medicine and about astronomy and what goes on in space, it's just not true. Whatever you learned in school, you can put it in the toilet bowl, unfortunately. You know, they want to keep people dumbed down so they don't know the truth about what's going on. Planets that are formed from being ejected as molten material from a star form into space in globes, and I'll make a very long story short because it's complicated. Basically, it hardens on the outside. The inside also hardens because of centrifugal force, and the molten material is often ejected at either points, which become polar openings. And then those planets have hollow interiors. That's how the Earth is. That is how Mars is. And so there are vast underground areas on both worlds, which are occupied and have been for eons of time. And so they were able to create a stargate, if you will, that's the popular term, from the Earth to Mars and other locations. And you could literally walk through one point at Montauk and exit at the Mars underground. And this is what we did. In fact, what people should also realize is that the surface of Mars is not what you've been told. Mars has a much denser atmosphere than what you've been led to believe. There's plant life. There is animal life. There is water on Mars. In fact, if you have a good telescope, right now in the spring season, maybe a little bit further on in the spring, if you look at Mars, you'll be able to see in the northern hemisphere of Mars green growth. You will see plants growing and blooming on Mars. That requires water. That requires an atmosphere. You see? So there's a lot about our solar system, about the universe, that we have not been told the truth.
So you told me that you were when you were transported to Mars, you found yourself in a room surrounded with some equipment, and when you moved onto the surface of Mars, you actually saw some stations, some U.S. and Russian space stations. Is that right?
Yes.
Am I remembering that right?
Well, kind of right, yes. There's a lot on the surface of Mars as well. You know, they also have discovered a long time ago monuments on Mars. You know, the face on Mars, there are pyramids, there are the remnants of ancient cities. It was once a very populated planet. And you will even see tube systems that run between mountain ranges, that run underground on Mars. This even, by the way, you have this on the moon as well. Both are occupied. And they only allowed certain people to live in those locations. Mars and the moon are both, the only word I can use is contested, meaning that people from Earth were not the first ones there. There were others before, and they're not too happy with the intrusion. And so there are very often skirmishes on these locations between those from Earth and those from elsewhere. And the Russians and the Americans were actually on the moon and on Mars back in 1957. And the Sputnik program and the Gemini program, that was all for show. That was all for public consumption. There is a space program that here on the Earth that is far more advanced than anything you have been shown on television.
Well, this information about the Earth's history and the different planets and what races it occupy, these planets and so forth and so on, how do you come by this knowledge? Was this something that was you learned through the Montauk experiment, or is this something that you learned afterwards?
Oh, no. This is what I learned there for 13 years. You know, you can't be there 13 years and not see what's going on. And it was quite an education, if you will. And those of us who were there, and I was very young, were told that the reason this had to be done, why they had to control mankind and manipulate everything on the Earth and beyond, was because, quite frankly, the powers that be felt that humanity was not bright enough or smart enough to take care of itself. They believed if humanity was left on its own to do as it pleased, it would destroy itself. And so they impressed upon everyone at Montauk that the work that was being done was for the good of everyone because it will actually save mankind. Now, at the time, as a young person, and I was only 14 years old when I went there, I didn't know any better, number one. And number two, they would give you drugs, they would give mind control, they would put you in an altered state, so there was no resistance. You just did what you were programmed to do. And so that's how it went.
Well, how many people would you say were involved with this experiment? Are there others like yourself that are out now sharing this esoteric information like you are?
I imagine there are. I mean, I know that Preston Nichols has been there, Al Bielek, Duncan Cameron, all of these people speak about their experiences there. I mean, each one of us had a different perspective because we were involved in different aspects of it. As far as how many people ran the place, I couldn't tell you that because I couldn't count them. I mean, there were army people, there were scientists, there were doctors, there were government officials, there were aliens. I would imagine there were several hundred people that were on that base as far as administration was concerned.
So you actually met some aliens working there as part of the project?
Oh, absolutely, and I wrote about that in my Montauk book. There were not a lot of different kinds because, contrary to what is out there, the government, at least the U.S. government, is only in close communication with three or four different groups. There are literally, well, hundreds, if not thousands, of groups out there. You know, the universe is teeming with life, and there are infinite universes. I mean, our solar system, well, our galaxy alone has 100 billion star systems, and there are about 100 billion galaxies that we can estimate, so you can do the math on that. It's astronomical what's out there. And so there are different categories of alien beings. There's the category, I'll say there's three main ones. One category is of the ones that are working with the government, that we have an association with them. There's another category which is considered to be enemy. They work against those here. And the third category is the unknown. It's all the others that we don't know who they are or what they are. So that's how they're categorized. So the government only allows a handful to keep close reins on it. But quite honestly, it doesn't work very well because they have such technology out there. They can come and go, some of them, without us even being aware of it or being able to stop them. So in a way, it's kind of a free-for-all. And I think the second half of this year, publicly, people are going to start to know a lot more than they do now.
Well, are these beings that we might be passing on the street right now looking just like us?
Some of them are, yes. As a matter of fact, yes. They estimated there's about 70% of alien beings out there that are human-like. That doesn't mean they look identical to humans, but they're human-like. Some of them, if you put a hat and coat and a scarf on and sunglasses, you wouldn't know the difference.
Have you encountered any since the Montauk Project on your own?
Yes, I have. Not frequently, but I have.
Do they come looking for you or?
Yes, you know, it's a very long distance call to call them.
I imagine.
So no.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I know it's kind of whenever they decide, and quite honestly, I'm not interested in communicating with them because, again, contrary to what people believe out there, there are no space brothers or beings of light that are here to help us. Everybody who's here has an agenda. They're here because they have their own purpose in mind. They're not here to help. You know, I'm sorry to say, all of that New Age information is just not correct. In fact, people should realize that the U.S. government is the one who created the New Age back in 1965 and purposely fed information via programming and satellite transmissions to create what we now know as channeling or contactees, for example. Much of it, maybe not 100%, but a good chunk of it is mind control from the government. And I know in Sedona, that's not going to be taken very happily, but still it's the truth.
Yeah, there's a few of them here, as you know.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, like every other person,
yeah.
Pretty much. Well, you know, since you've been spreading this information and your experiences in Montauk, has the government threatened you at all? It doesn't seem like this is information that they would like to get out in the world.
Well, a lot of people ask me that question, and believe me, they've made my life pretty darn miserable. As people know, they have thrown me in jail. They've taken all my finances away. They have physically hurt me and loved ones. Yes, they have made my life pretty miserable. They told me I was more dangerous dead than alive, so they don't kill me. But sometimes I wish that was a better option because it's not so easy to be here, you know, with what they do. And so, yes, they are always constantly sending ELF transmissions, bombarding, sending people to sabotage constantly. It's a never-ending battle here.
Well, I assume that they're continuing on with their experiments that they started in Montauk. Do you know anything about that, where they might be continuing those experiments now?
Yes. You know, Montauk, for those who may have read the series of books, you know, 1983, August 12th, 1983, the Montauk Project crashed because of, I don't want to call it an accident, but it was a mishap where one of the psychics was left unmonitored. He created an electromagnetic disturbance that couldn't be stopped, and they literally had to shut the thing down in order to save themselves, make a long story short. So no longer at Montauk are they doing those kind of experiments, but that has now been extrapolated elsewhere, even globally. There are other locations in the U.S. and other countries where these things are being tested. Arizona is a big location for that. Also New Mexico, up in Alaska, along the Appalachian Mountains. There are a lot of underground bases. In fact, at this point, there's close to about 150 underground bases in the continental U.S. alone, many of which are used for mind control and genetic manipulation experiments. Nearby Montauk, that's still being used, as it was originally, is Plum Island, which some of you have heard of. Plum Island is where they do the biological experiments and create new viruses and bacteria and hybrid creatures, monsters, if you will, just to see what comes up and how they can use it. I think it was last summer on conventional media where they had a couple of creatures wash up at Montauk Beach, which looked like they were genetically altered, if you will, and those came from Plum Island.
Mm-hmm. Well, I assume that there's always been kind of a big portal or vortex there on Montauk, and I assume that that's still there, right?
Well, you know, there's a natural energetic vortex there because of the ocean and the way the land is situated, and also because of the pyramids underneath the area. There is also, and people may not know this, in the early 1900s, Crowley, in Land's End, England, created rituals that connected to Montauk energetically, so that there are exchanges between the two points in Britain and the U.S. And if you drew a line between the two of them, you would see that in that location is where a lot of sightings of UFOs, sea creatures, ships sinking, etc., have occurred along that line. So, yes, there is an energetic anomaly there. Some of it's natural, some of it's artificially enhanced.
Well, you mentioned that you've been to Sedona. Is there anything here that I should know about?
Well, I don't want to insult any listeners, but I will tell you, to me, when I went to Sedona, it reminded me of old East Berlin, meaning, you know, when you used to go to East Berlin when it was under Soviet control, East Berlin looked so nice and pretty and had flowers and everything, beautiful houses, except when you went behind the buildings, they were all propped up with wood planks. There was a facade. And that's what Sedona reminded me of. It's a facade for what's underneath, which is a huge underground U.S. base, which the American government admits they have there. And a lot of the energies people feel are not natural, but they're from electromagnetic generations from underneath the ground.
And do you have any sense of or any information as to where that base is? Is it under one of the commonly known vortexes here, or is it outside of the city someplace?
It's just outside of town. In fact, there's an Air Force base not far from town. And it's in that general location, but it's huge, and it extends in many different directions. It also connects to other underground bases in the West. For example, it connects to a base in Taos, New Mexico. It connects to Mount Shasta in California. It also connects to a huge underground base in the Mojave. And, of course, it connects to the underground area in Nevada, Area 51.
Mm.
Now, a lot of what was going on in Area 51 is no longer there. It was moved about 10, 11 years ago to a new underground base on the border of Utah and Colorado, and it's very, very advanced.
Wow. A lot happening out there that we're not aware of, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to find out about your hyperspace techniques. Are these based on what you learned at Montauk or what you were put through in Montauk?
Yes. You know, using hyperspace techniques is like anything else. You can take an energy, use it for good, or take an energy, use it for bad. You know, it's. I call energy from God mind. It's what's underlying all things. It's the pure energy frequency that can be manifested physically by the direction of mind. Human beings, as you mentioned earlier in the beginning of the show, use 10% or less of their brain capacity. That means there's 90% of the brain that's unused. But beyond that, what people don't realize is that 97% of your DNA is unused. We only use 3%. And that 3% differentiates species and individuals within that species. Because the 97% that I'm talking about is common to all DNA of all species. So if you're an amoeba, a rose bush, a human being, or an elephant, 97% of your DNA is identical. To me, that proves an original source, a God mind behind all creation, since everything has that commonality. Scientists call that 97% junk DNA. And they call it junk DNA because they don't know how to access it. So when they can't use it, they call it junk. See? That's right. Modern science.
And so your techniques would also activate this what they call junk DNA then, is that right?
Absolutely, absolutely, because our DNA is created by the mind. And I have a flow chart that has the first line is mind, because that's all we are is mind, and the mind is electromagnetic in nature. As that descends into physical reality, it attracts molecular structure, which forms into protein bases, and those protein bases become the blueprint or DNA of the body. So literally, what you think is what you become. And it's a very simple flowchart, actually. And so in my work, where I talk about colors, I talk about archetype or symbols and tones, that triad is what puts together all of these pieces to create your reality. And if you know how to use the colors and archetypes properly and string them together, you can create whatever it is that you want to create in your life.
And so are there techniques that you teach in order to learn how to use these colors and archetypes?
Yes, I have written about it in my books, my DVDs. I do seminars on this. On my website, on my Q&A, I talk about this all the time. Anyone, no matter who you are, you can do this because you're part of God mind. Everything that exists is part of that, and so you have the same capacity as anyone else.
Well, how long have you been teaching these techniques, Stuart?
I've been teaching these techniques, I'd say, a good 20 years, maybe a little bit longer. You know, it's an ongoing process. There are infinite combinations, infinite visualizations. People can create their own. As long as you know the basics, you can extrapolate them and interpret them and modify them as you see fit. Unfortunately, the government uses them in a negative way. You know, it's a two-edged sword, and I always use the analogy, I could take a very sharp knife, and I can carve a piece of wood into a beautiful statue, or I could kill somebody with it. The knife is the same. It's just what you do with it. Same as hyperspace energy.
So if I wanted to take your program, what would you say would be my results? What could I expect from taking your program and learning these techniques?
Yeah, of course, everyone goes at their own pace, and everyone has their own intensity. So, for example, there are people I know that have studied my books or my work or gone to the seminars, and instantly they're able to do the work no problem. Others take a little bit longer, depending on their mindset. Some people refuse to accept it. Some people, unfortunately, have taken a lot of medications or drugs, and so it's blocked their pineal gland, and they need to detox from that before they can open their pineal gland. A lot of my work involves centering at the pineal gland at the middle of the head and opening that up, because that gland is the liaison between the physical and non-physical side of existence. It also balances the left and right hemispheres of the brain and centers you in what you need to manifest. So those who study my work will need to work on their pineal gland, practice using color therapy in their minds, that kind of a thing, in order to open up their capacities.
It sounds like it's a form of alchemy that if you follow it to its completion, you should achieve nothing short of enlightenment, I would assume.
Well, it's a mental alchemy, if you will. That's one way of looking at it. But really what it is opening up what's already there. You know, nothing that I show you or teach you is new to you. It's just you've never looked at it before. It's already in you. It's in every living thing, everything that exists.
Well, what we try to cultivate in our organization is gnosis, intuitive wisdom about who we are in truth and what the universe is all about that exists within all of us. Can your techniques open up this capacity, this facility within us all?
Of course, because you're doing the same thing maybe in a different way. You know, everything is connected. Nothing exists except through God mind. You know, there's really only one mind in existence, and we're each a part of that. And so we can always become aware of it. It's not, and we can never be disconnected from it. We're always connected, whether we realize it or not. Otherwise, we wouldn't exist.
Are you teaching this in workshops, or can people purchase your program and take it by correspondence, or how does this work?
Yes, if they go to my website, expansions.com, they can read books if they want. Some people prefer DVDs. Some people prefer personal consultations. We have seminars, for example, this coming month, April, we have a very big seminar coming up the third week in April, which is on the site. You can read all the details, and people are coming from all over the world to learn different techniques in healing, both mentally and physically and emotionally. And we do workshops like that all over the world at different times of the year. We just came back in January from a trip to Antarctica, where we did a lot of work there as well, in South America. We go everywhere in the world.
Why did you choose Antarctica?
Well, it was the one continent I hadn't been to yet.
Ah.
and the penguins were quite needy, I might say.
But you've been... It sounds like you've been a lot of places, not only on this planet, but throughout the solar system and other dimensions. Can you speak to what would you consider to be one of your most fascinating journeys and fascinating experiences on some realm or some planet or some dimension?
Well, I have to say there's about two journeys, if you will, that I found fascinating. And one of them was the very last one, the one to Antarctica, because it's so pristine, it is so unearthly that it takes your breath away. Plus, if people knew what was going on underneath Antarctica, they would also take their breath away. So to me, that was one of the most exhilarating experiences that I had. And the other one is related almost to what you said, because the trip that we went to south of France, actually starting in Paris and going to south of France and Spain on that Magdalene journey and Saint-Louis de la Mer and Montserrat, Montségur, all those places were absolutely extraordinary. And we learned so much about true history that is not taught in our school system. It was absolutely incredible.
Well, do you feel like anything special you'd like to share was revealed to you during that tour?
Yes. For example, I'm sure your listeners probably know from what you tell them that Jesus or Emmanuel was married to Mary Magdalene, had three children with her, and because things became a little precarious for her in the Holy Land, she traveled across the Mediterranean, stopping in Malta and then going towards the south of France with her daughter Sarah and one of her sons, and created in the south of France a Hebrew kingdom, which is known in France. You know, European history, they teach this. These things, not in North America, you know. And we even went to the cave high up, 2,000 feet up in the mountains, where Mary Magdalene hid in the beginning when she arrived from her enemies, so the Romans wouldn't find her, into this cave, which is now a church built into the cave. And in there was her femur bone was there. And in the church in Paris, in the Magdalene Church, is her skull. You can go and see it. It's absolutely incredible. And then in Saint-Louis de la Mer, which was the city where they first came ashore, they celebrate every year the arrival of the Black Madonna. Now, people misunderstand that term. A Black Madonna, that was not her skin color. That was what she practiced. She practiced the black arts. That was not Mary Magdalene, but her daughter Sarah. And Sarah's bones can be seen in the church in Saint-Marie de la Mer on the south coast of France. That is quite an experience to see that. And so there's a lot in France. In fact, my opinion is France has more mysteries in it than India. You know, it's quite amazing what you can find there.
Well, so where's your work and on the planet headed right now, Stuart?
Well, right now I am working on finishing my project of the true history of the Earth. I have several DVDs, part one and part two of True History of the Earth. But now I'm working on a three-set volume of books, which will designate by continent and location within the continents, the history and movement of mankind and those who are not mankind, and how we got to where we are today. I'm also working on information coming from the Kuiper's Belt, outside of our solar system, because I know that there is amassing there a huge fleet, both from this this universe and other universes, interdimensional, which is literally surrounding our solar system, and I think is going to have the Illuminati on the run in the not-too-distant future. Now, that doesn't mean that what's out there is good. It just means it's another force, and it's one which is against the Illuminati. However, I still don't think they're love, light, and peace out there. Again, they have their own agenda, so it's just, in my opinion, going from one control system to another control system. So what I'm also working on is finding out what that other agenda might be and how it's affecting us now and in the future, and what can be done about that.
So really, there's no good guys out there that's really supporting us to make a planetary transition into a higher consciousness. They're just kind of hanging out there, just checking us out and making sure we don't blow each other up.
That's kind of a new agey kind of thing, you know. You know, if you ever watched that movie Independence Day, where the big UFO is hanging over the city and all these New Age people are on the roof with their signs saying, let us in, and they're ready to be raptured, and then the door of the spaceship opens and they're cheering, and they're the first ones blasted away. That was the big message to all the New Age people that are waiting for this rapture. It's not coming. The good people out there, what you call good aliens, whatever, your space brothers, they don't come here because the good ones know not to interfere. You know, there's a Chinese saying that says, if you give a man a fish, he's fed for the day. If you teach him how to fish, you feed him for life. Well, the good ones out there know that. And so they don't interfere. They're not going to give us a fish. They're going to sit back and say, okay, you got into this mess. You need to get out of this mess. That's what they're doing. And so it's really up to each one of us, as individuals and as a species, to remove victimization mind pattern, change all the negativity, and reverse what's going on here, so that someday the Earth could be a paradise.
Well, do you think that's a possibility that could be soon? Everyone's putting their money on 2012, as you know.
Now, 2012 is a government mind control thing. You know, when I was in the Yucatan and you speak to the Mayan priests, they laugh at that. They say that's why the Mayan calendar is a circle, because where it ends, it starts all over again. That's happened many times in the past, and here we still are. The Earth is not coming to an end. 2012 is a government agenda for total domination. That's their goal, and that's what they're working on right now, and that's what we see happening right now. And then, you know, one of the priests said, December 21st, 2012 is when all that's supposed to happen. He said, December 22nd, 2012, I'm going to get up, make my coffee, and watch TV like I always do. That's what the Mayans say. See, it's a big joke to them, what Westerners believe, because it's a government agenda.
Well, apparently they're telling, well, as you know, Drumville Melchizedek, some of their secrets about the Earth changes, and I've heard him speak and talk about there being the potential for a mass Earth cataclysm, where as many as, you know, a third or half the population doesn't make it. There's a huge polar ship potentially imminent to bring on this new age. You probably heard this, right?
I've heard that about 30 times in the last 30 years. And I could tell you about 16 times that was supposed to have happened, you know, including New Year's 2000. It's just a bunch of hokey stuff that's created to put fear in people. That's not going to happen. And, you know, it's such a diversion from what's really going on that when people finally find out the truth, it'll be too late, because they were looking over here when they should be looking over there. And that's what the whole purpose of that story is. That's not what's going to happen.
Well, I guess we can appreciate there are people like yourself out there that are ready to set the record straight and clue us into what's really going on. So we can appreciate you for that and that kind of work. Otherwise, there's not a lot of people that are trying to spread potentially what is the truth right now. So,
well, unfortunately, in this I don't want to say this business, but this genre of information, there's a lot of people out there that tell pretty lies, and also who tell stories that are not exactly correct. You know, and I'm not going to name names. But all I'm going to say is anyone who doesn't use their real name is suspect. Because those are programming names that are used.
I see. Okay. Well, I guess you don't have to say any more than that.
Yeah.
Well, okay. Well, we're pretty much out of time. Is there anything else that you'd like to bring up right now, Stuart, before we go off?
I would just want to tell the audience to have an open mind. I realize not everyone's going to agree with me, and I realize there'll be those who will attack me, and that's happened many times before, and that's okay. Always shoot the messenger. But one day, very soon, people will see the real truth, and I hope that they will work on themselves, correct their mind patterns, fix themselves physically, so that they can prepare for what is going to come on this earth in a very short time.
Okay, well, that's I wouldn't say encouraging words, but that's good guidance. Oh, I appreciate that, Stuart. Well, thank you so much for being on our show today, and maybe we'll get back to you sometime in the future, have you on again, and I'd certainly like to connect with you if you're ever back in town in Sedona. So keep that in mind.
Okay, thank you.
And we'll be in touch. So thanks again for being on.
Thank you very much.
Okay, well, next week we have a good friend of mine, Paolo Corallini Garampi. He is the Grand Chancellor of the Sovereign Military Order of Templar of Jerusalem in Italy, SMOTJ or OSMTH, which is one of the main Templar organizations on the planet today. And he's going to talk about how the early Templars evolved into the SMOTJ and what the current activities of that organization are. And we're also going to be talking about the conference, the April 17th conference that we're co-sponsoring with Paolo, and he's the main organizer of it. It's going to be over there in Italy, and we're inviting the some of the most important heads of the different initiatic societies to come to this. We're going to talk about our common origins together, and we're going to talk about how we can come together now as kind of a one-world organization where we can share our knowledge. And ultimately, we can spread it out into the world, because one belief is that we were formed to be the guardians of this knowledge, and this knowledge is truly needed right now. So if you want to know more about this, please join us next week, same time, same place. And in the meantime, have a wonderful, wonderful week, and always remember that Holy Grail, the true Holy Grail, is always right inside of you. Bye for now.